This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Coming up, China announces tariff reductions, but none for the United States. A family in Los Angeles gets the best holiday gift ever.
I'm so happy that we can actually move into the, we actually moved into this house, and this officially the best thing that ever happened to me.
Also ahead, the best tech gifts under the Christmas tree this year. It's all in today's International Edition. In his Christmas message to the city and to the world, Pope Francis said his wish this year was for fraternity among individuals of every nation and culture. And he hoped this would help bring peace between Israelis and Palestinians in Syria and in Yemen. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
Per questo il mio augurio di buon Natale.
My wish for a happy Christmas is a wish for fraternity, the Pope said, addressing more than a million Catholics all over the world in his message from the Central Loggia of St. Peter's Basilica. And he added, fraternity among individuals of every nation and culture, fraternity among people with different ideas, yet capable of respecting and listening to one another, fraternity among persons of different religions. Pope Francis said, the Son of God tells us that salvation comes through love, acceptance, respect for this poor humanity of ours, which we all share in a great variety of races, languages, and cultures. Yet all of us are brothers and sisters in humanity.
Allora le nostre differenze non sono un danno o un pericolo.
Our differences, then, the Pope told the faithful, are not a detriment or a danger. They are a source of richness. As when an artist is about to make a mosaic, it is better to have tiles of many colors available rather than just a few. The Pope then turned his thoughts to conflict areas in the world, first among all the Middle East. He expressed the hope that bonds of fraternity may enable Israelis and Palestinians to resume dialogue and undertake a journey of peace that can put an end to an over 70-year conflict. Francis said he hoped the beleaguered country of Syria would once again find fraternity after these long years of war. He urged the international community to work decisively for a political solution that can put aside divisions and partisan interests so that the Syrian people, especially all those who were forced to leave their own lands and seek refuge elsewhere, can return to live in peace in their own country. The Pope also had thoughts for Yemen and expressed the hope that the truce brokered by the international community may finally bring relief to all those children and people exhausted by war and famine. With respect to the African continent, the Pope's thoughts went to the millions of persons who are refugees or displaced and in need of humanitarian assistance and food security. He expressed a desire for the clash of arms to be silenced in order to allow a new dawn of fraternity to rise over the entire continent. This week will be a very busy one for the 82-year-old pontiff. He will again address the faithful on Wednesday, hold a Vespers ceremony on New Year's Eve, and another Mass on New Year's Day. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
For the latest news around the clock, please visit voanews.com. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study from a pair of geophysicists proposes our current ice age, which began between 2.6 and 3.2 million years ago, may have been caused by a true polar wander, or a shift in the geological location of the Earth's poles. It's thought that this phenomenon could be caused when dense lumps of the Earth's mantle builds up in areas far from the equator. The study from researchers at Rice University in Texas suggests over the past 12 million years, this true polar wander has caused Greenland to move close enough to the North Pole to kick off what some call the Quaternary Ice Age. To To reach their findings, the scientists analyzed fossil signatures in deep ocean sediment samples, the magnetic signature of oceanic crust, as well as the position of the mantle hotspot that created what are now the Hawaiian Islands. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Welcome back to International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. China says it will reduce tariffs on more than 700 imported goods next year. The finance ministry says the reduced tariffs will apply to 23 countries. The United States is not on that list. VOA's Ira Melman spoke with Phil Levy, a senior fellow on the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, and formerly a senior economist for trade on President George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisers. He asked Levy if he was surprised by the developments.
Not really. They made promises of tariff cuts before. I think China was never enthused about engaging in a trade war. I think it's realizing that it's getting damaged by some of the tariffs that it applies. So, and it's also made quite a push to try and appear as though it is the free trader leading the world, and has done that since President Trump appeared on the stage. So this seems in keeping with recent behavior.
Do you think this is a move to spur the United States to take some action of its own?
I think there are probably a series of efforts coming from China where they're aware of the early March deadline, and they would like to at least give President Trump an excuse for backing away from the trade war, should he be so inclined. China has not wanted to engage in it and has made repeated offers for ways to de-escalate. So far, President Trump hasn't taken them up on many of them.
There has been some focus on agricultural products for both countries, with China just starting now to buy what had been before no soybeans from the United States, drastically affecting the soybean growers in the United States. Do you think this might have something to do with that?
I'm sure this is all connected in terms of positioning, trying to put together a set of deliverables that will make it palatable to resolve this conflict in early March. I'm not sure it's going to work. That we should also note, these are not, you know, novelties that China would offer these kinds of things. They've offered similar things over the last year or two. They're hoping that maybe this time the U.S. will be more eager to deal.
There has been some word that the only countries that, or at least among the countries, the 23 countries where the tariffs are being reduced or wiped out, they include New Zealand, Australia, South Korea, Switzerland, and Iceland, and zero import tariffs on products from Hong Kong and Macau. The United States is not mentioned. How do you deal with that?
It sounds like what China's doing here is engaging in selective liberalization with allies in a WTO-consistent way, if it is done in the context of free trade agreements that they are currently striking or have already struck, then that is legit under WTO rules.
So therefore, this really isn't anything new, is it?
It's not necessarily anything new. That there have been talks of sort of doing this and extending the agreements that are already in place. And that, again, is consistent with past Chinese behavior, where you take the same promise from a year ago and dust it off and present it again.
And how do you expect the United States to react to this?
I think the U.S. has to make some big strategic decisions about whether it wants a resolution, whether it wants a sort of ongoing dialogue, or whether it wants an all-out fight. And those decisions will determine the reaction, not so much the details of Chinese offers.
Going on to another story, that China's legislature is considering a law that would ban local governments in China from forcing foreign companies to hand over technology. That, of course, is a focal issue that has helped to spark Washington's tariff war with Beijing. How do you react to that?
I think it certainly sounds like a positive step. Whether it's a big positive step or a small positive step would depend a lot on how this plays out in practice. Frequently, U.S. companies doing business in China have not objected so much to the laws on China's books, but to the way they were implemented, enforced, and interpreted. So the idea that you improve the laws on the books may or may not translate into better results for American companies.
So all this is kind of a wait-and-see situation on both of these issues, correct?
Very much so. I think it was unrealistic to think that you would get major changes in these kind of deep-seated structural problems over 90 days, which is what the task that the administration, the Trump administration, set itself. So then the question is, what kind of promises are they willing to accept? And we are now seeing the parade of promises coming out of Beijing.
Do you think that China has asked or will ask the United States for something in return for any of these moves?
I'd be very surprised if they didn't have requests in return. And we know that there are requests China has made for a long time, such as for the U.S. to be more liberal in allowing high technology sales to China. I expect we'll see more of that and a range of things to make this look more like a balanced agreement. I think, you know, this is part of a pattern of China floating possibilities, you know, little olive branches just in case the U.S. is going for it. There's probably some awareness of what's happening in markets. The Trump administration was fairly vocal about how China's falling markets had made it vulnerable. They might see a little turnabout with that, where China indulges in a bit of the same.
VOA's Ira Melman speaking with Phil Levy, a senior fellow on the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, and formerly a senior economist for trade on President George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
So many people dream of snow at Christmas time, but that could be wishful thinking in the not-too-distant future. The five hottest years on record have all taken place this decade, and it looks like 2018 will join their ranks. This year showcased the hazards of climate change while showing how far the world is from confronting it. VOA Steve Barragona looks back on a year of climate catastrophes and controversies.
In November, California's deadliest wildfire on record killed 88 people, a grim example of consequences on a warming planet. The state's fires are getting worse, says former wildfire fighting chief Ken Pimlott.
Things are changing. The folks can say what they want to say, but when firefighters are living climate change, it's staring them in the face every day.
In September, Hurricane Florence's record-breaking rains caused massive flooding in North Carolina. Fire at one extreme, water at the other, like the difference between where the world is headed and where it needs to be. UN scientists issued a sobering report ahead of December's climate talks in Poland. Ho-Sung Lee chaired the panel.
It shows that the window to limit warming to 1.5 degree is narrow, that it would require a net global emissions of carbon dioxide to fall by about 45% by 2030. Every year matters.
But this year, emissions rose by an estimated 2.7%, the biggest jump since 2011. U.S. government scientists published an equally stark report in November on the impacts of climate change on the nation. President Donald Trump rejected it.
I don't believe it.
You don't believe it?
No, I don't believe it.
Trump told VOA that cutting emissions would be too expensive.
I'm not going to put the country out of business trying to maintain certain standards that probably don't matter. When you look at China and when you look at other countries where they have very, you know, foul air, they have not good air, we're going to be clean, but they're not, and it costs a lot of money.
But Trump's efforts to loosen regulations on producing and burning fossil fuels have met with mixed results so far, says the Natural Resources Defense Council's Jake Schmidt.
The good news is that a number of those are being held up in court. The progress is a bit slower in terms of unwinding them, but clearly everything that's been on the climate action agenda for the last couple of years, the Trump administration is trying to undo.
Trump's Republican Party lost control of the House of Representatives in the midterm elections. That will mean more pushback from Democrats on climate and much more in 2019. Meanwhile, Trump's hostility toward climate science did not stop UN negotiators from reaching a deal in December on a rulebook for carrying out the Paris Climate Agreement. Critics say it does not go nearly far enough, but getting everyone on board was not easy, says meeting chair Michal Kurtica.
In these circumstances, every single step forward is a big achievement. And through this package, you have made a thousand little steps forward together.
But step forward carefully, experts warn. Raising fuel taxes to fight climate change helped bring yellow vest protesters to the streets in France. Who will pay the cost of climate action as the bill for past inaction comes due? It's a question for 2019 and beyond. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. Scientists have discovered more than 100 unnamed species of coral and other marine life during a research voyage south of Tasmania in Australia. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Scientists have discovered a colourful underwater garden at depths of up to 2 kilometres south of the Australian state of Tasmania. They used special cameras to probe 45 undersea mountains, finding dozens of unnamed species of corals, lobsters and mollusks. The expedition also discovered bioluminescent squids, deep-water sharks and basketwork eels. Experts spent a month on board the research vessel Investigator, which is operated by the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation, or the CSIRO. It's an independent Australian government agency responsible for scientific research. Scientists have been exploring the Tasmanian cluster of ridges known as seamounts in Australia's Tasman Fracture and Huon Marine Parks. The coral they found is soft, which means it's different from the coral in a tropical reef. The expedition's chief scientist is Alan Williams from the CSIRO.
Quite amazingly, at these kinds of depths, there are coral reefs that in many ways look similar to the kinds of reefs you see in shallow tropical areas. And so what we were seeing on our screens, delivered in real time from the cameras, were just absolutely fantastic images of these extensive, delicate, colourful and very rich coral reef systems.
The research teams also saw images of the lasting damage inflicted on the ocean floor by fishing crews. Trawl fishing was banned in the 1990s, but much of the region's coral is still to fully recover. Experts say science knows more about the surface of the moon than it does about the deep sea. Despite their research south of Tasmania, they still don't understand why bright corals can survive in a pitch-black world far beneath the surface of the ocean. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
South Africa has the world's largest antiretroviral therapy program, with over 4 million people receiving treatment. But the ARV drug therapy, regarded by many as a panacea for HIV, is complicated and comes with a number of side effects, both physical and mental. As VOA Sahir Kassim explains from Johannesburg, perceptions of those side effects and the complex nature of the treatment has brought a new serious problem. Many people just don't want to take the drugs anymore.
Lebogang Motsumi has been on antiretroviral or ARV therapy for over 8 years. In this time, she has stopped taking her medications twice for extended periods of over 6 months. Last year, she nearly died because she put off taking her pills, which is exactly what she had planned.
I was tired of taking medication, but because I was going through a depressive mode, I kind of knew what could happen to me if I stopped taking my treatment. So for me, it was, I don't think I had the guts to swallow pills or cut myself. So I kind of felt if I stopped taking my treatment, eventually something's going to happen and I'll fall ill and pass away.
It's a sign of what's known as ARV fatigue. Patients become physically and psychologically weary of living with the side effects and stigma of being HIV positive. Social workers and scientists are seeing an increase in the number of patients with low CD4 cell count levels, a sign they have stopped their ARV treatment.
You know, treatment fatigue is a qualitative concept, not a quantitative one. So measuring treatment fatigue is quite difficult. But that doesn't mean that it cannot be measured. It will mean methods that can actually track it qualitatively, that is actually going into people's lives and seeking to understand why people are having difficulties in staying in treatment.
Speaking at an event to mark the 50th anniversary of World AIDS Day,
Activist Sadie Brown says more efforts need to be focused on the psychological well-being of people receiving the treatment.
As soon as you start getting ARV fatigue, you get told that you don't want to be on treatment. And that's not necessarily the case. You are just tired.
Once a person stops taking their ARVs for an extended period, the disease morphs and requires a different and sometimes stronger drug in order to fight the HIV. Lebogang was lucky. She was able to speak to someone to get back on track with her ARV treatment. But she worries others will not get the opportunity she had and may die without help. Zahir Kassim, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Still to come, some of the hottest tech toys of the year. That and much more is coming up on VOA's International Edition.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
Take your pick, watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Being homeless is difficult, especially during the holidays. But this season will be special for a father and his five children. Mike O'Sullivan reports from Los Angeles, where the family celebrated Christmas in a new apartment, one located in an innovative building made from shipping containers.
John Kilgore has been getting ready for Christmas, the first he has spent with his children in many years.
We want to be in our own place, our own home, to have something that we can call our own.
We got two bedrooms over here. This
he shows a visitor through the four-bedroom apartment he shares with his children, ages 9 to 14.
Comfortable. We got space to do what we like do. We got TVs. We got like all the stuff we need.
And they're together as a family.
I'm so happy that we can actually move into the, like, that we actually moved into this house, and this officially the best thing that ever happened to me.
The apartment complex has a novel design. It's built from shipping containers in a partnership between Flyaway Homes, a social enterprise, that's a for-profit company that targets social problems, and a nonprofit organization.
But more importantly than the shipping container, I think, is the concept of modular factory-built housing, where the building is essentially a product that's being put on top of our site-built foundation.
53,000 people are homeless in Los Angeles, some living on the streets and others out of sight.
You know, you're stepping over tents, and there's a number of people that live there. But then scattered throughout L.A. County, we do have a number of areas that also struggle with homelessness, so it's an ongoing issue, but it's also come to the forefront more recently, which means more money is getting devoted to helping homeless people become housed, and that's also a great thing.
For John Kilgore and his children, this Christmas marks a new beginning.
We're starting off with Christmas, and then starting 2019, we'll start, you know, on each individual goal, you know, for their, to better them, and also better myself.
With a place to call their own in a project that may point the way to solving the problem of homelessness. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Among the most popular Christmas gifts under the tree this year were tech gadgets. International Edition's Lori London asked technology reporter Chris Morris about the latest and greatest new gadgets.
You know, there's a lot of choices this year. This time of year, technology is when it really shines. That's when tech companies make all of their money. I think one of the things you're going to see that's real popular this year is the Apple Watch Series 4. Now, Apple's had a watch for a while now, and it's been okay. But the game changer here is this one has a built-in EKG feature. So you can share detailed heart readings with your doctor without having to schedule an in-person visit. It won't detect heart attacks, but it can warn you if there are warning signs. It can also, if you've got an elderly person on your gift list, let's say a grandparent or an elderly uncle or aunt, it can tell if you take a hard fall, and it will automatically call 911 if you don't get up.
And we know TVs are always big this time of year. Anything new and exciting?
You always want a big, pretty picture, and, you know, whether you've cut the cord or whether you still have cable. I think the best choice right now is probably the Samsung 4K The Frame TV. Now, it has an amazing picture. You expect that from a Samsung set. What makes this one different, though, is when you turn it off, it acts as a display for artwork or photos or slideshows. And you can even buy an optional frame to put around it to sort of hide the fact that you've got this big TV set that's the focus of your living room or whatever, and it becomes a piece of art in there. Now, those start at about $16.99. Of course, they go up from there, depending on the size of the screen you get.
Cool. And then we've got the latest, greatest smartphones. It seems like they work just long enough to get you through until there are new ones coming out, and they make them that way, so you have to go and buy a new one. And geez, they're getting expensive. What is worth going after, and what's popular right now, and what are people going after?
It's a funny way that you ask it like that, because it's not even so much that what it's worth, because all of these are expensive phones right now. It doesn't matter what you get. Best one that I've seen on the market right now is the iPhone XS Max. It's the latest and greatest. It has all that you'd expect from an iPhone: an amazing camera, a big screen at 6.5 inches. It's got the best processor on the market, but it starts at $1,099. That's pretty high.
Whoa.
Well, the fact of the matter is, you know, if you've got an iPhone 8 and it's still working, it's nice to have the latest and greatest, but this is a category where maybe you want to spend your money somewhere else.
And I know game consoles are always pretty big this time of year for the holidays. People, kids requesting them, sometimes adults. What's new and exciting?
There's nothing really new and exciting this year. They're all sort of the same systems that were out last year. But if you're looking just to buy one, I would go with Nintendo Switch. It's been out a little while, but it's still kind of the best all-around console. It's something you can plug into your television and play on a big screen. If you're out and about, you can just carry this with you because it has its own built-in screen. It's got some amazing games that are available right now. They have Super Smash Brothers that just came out, their big release this year. It's selling just incredibly right now. And I think that's probably your best value proposition. If you don't need a PlayStation or an Xbox at this point, it's worth the money. It's $299.
If someone is just looking for some sort of tech gadget and they don't really know which direction to move in, is there anything really that stands out to you?
You know, I've seen some surveys about what people want from tech this time of year. And of course, things like TVs and computers are pretty high on it. But those are kind of personalized. If you want to get someone a tech gift, but you don't really know what to get them, headphones or earbuds are probably your best bet. Now, what I'd recommend is the Bose SoundSport free, quote, truly wireless headphones. Those are sort of like the AirPods that you see Apple have, but they have that Bose sound quality. They last 5 hours with the battery life. They're sweat and water resistant. And the best part is, if you lose one, you can find it with the app that comes with those. And those cost just $199, which, you know, it's a little high, I guess, in some circles. But it's for a tech item, especially one that advanced, it's a pretty good price.
VOA's Lori London speaking with technology reporter Chris Morse. Well, that's it for today's International Edition. Thank you for listening. And my thanks to our director, Dan Brown, and also engineer Curtis Bynum, who is doing his last English air show today before retiring. Curtis, thank you for all your service. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Friends, this is Sunday Shomari Hostel. Let's talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Our topic will be superstition. This will be Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Tom.